And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Welcome into the latest That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton, a.k.a. SEC Mike, joined as always with my cousin Shane Sheridan, Big Orange Vols on Twitter, if you want to give that guy a follow. How's it going, Shane?
Hey, buddy.
The main thing I wanted to talk with you today, Shane, was I don't know if you saw this dog post column on the behind-the-scenes kind of the situation there in Athens in 2015, between the dynamic of Jeremy Pruitt and Mark Richt. Did you get a chance to check that out?
Yeah, this thing just keeps going, don't it? I read the first article, and I think a second one came out today, mm-hmm. but I was only able to get a paragraph in, and then they wanted me to subscribe, so I don't know if you're... I don't want to know the story that much, so maybe I don't know if you got access to that, but I did not get that part, so... But I did read the vacuum one.
I believe it cost $1 to read the story. Am I right?
Yeah, not worth it.
So that's my follow up. What is the level of payment you would pay? Would you pay a quarter?
No, I really wouldn't. I maybe watch a 30-second video, but that's about it.
All right, good to know. Yeah, so I mean, this article, there's nothing, you know, no huge revelations. I think it's actually a lot of what I've already touched on this podcast. I just kind of, you know, a few episodes back, you asked me about what exactly was going on down there in Athens when Jeremy Pruitt was on the staff, and I kind of touched on some of this of just, you know, there was a dynamic of Mark Richt's guys, Jeremy Pruitt's guys, and it sounds like they just kind of gave Jeremy Pruitt a little too much power.
Yeah.
And of course, this was coming off, he won a national championship at Florida State. He had won several championships at Alabama. His stock at this point was sky high. I remember thinking that Georgia was going to win the national championship the first year he got to Georgia just because of the incredible streak that he was on personally.
Right.
Now, obviously, that didn't really come to fruition there, but more than anything, you know, and this article kind of touches on it briefly, but they just kind of skim over it, was the fact that the offense is what really killed Mark Richt. And
yeah,
it seems like everything that Jeremy Pruitt brought to Athens, I mean, that's kind of the similar stuff that Kirby Smart's brought there now. So it's just interesting that you see some of, I understand why Mark Richt's players kind of need a scapegoat, but if anything, I think the Georgia fan base should be appreciative to what Jeremy Pruitt did there.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think they were looking for a scapegoat, and apparently, you know, 2015 was just a train wreck down there. They needed somebody to blame, but in the end, they got rid of Mark Richt. So, I mean, I don't hear too many Georgia fans complaining now, you know. And reading that article, it seemed like it kind of was the offense, you know, Schottenheimer, you know, implementing his offense 3 weeks before the season starts. And, yeah, Jeremy Pruitt's an alpha dog, but I don't know if you could say that's the reason that the coaches were divided. It sounds to me like they didn't stick to their original plan. And then it just like I said, a train wreck.
Yeah, and I believe Georgia had the number one passing defense in the nation this year. So, and they were pretty stout on the run as well. It's not like they were Tennessee actually had the number one passing defense in the SEC last year. I don't know if you know that stat, but that's just because teams like Georgia Tech ran for 600 yards on them. There was no need to pass, but
for sure. And I wonder how many of Pruitt's boys are down there in Georgia helping them win right now.
Yeah, basically a lot of the younger players now, obviously Nick Chubb, Sony Michel, those guys were already there. But the Roquan Smith, who won the Defensive Player of the Year in the nation, that was a Pruitt guy, I believe. And a lot of these defensive standouts are Pruitt guys. I know Mikael Harmon, the receiver and kick returner that's outstanding for Georgia. That's a Jeremy Pruitt guy. But the most interesting thing about this Dog Post column I wanted to ask you about was just there was a situation apparently in practice where two of the best players on the team got into a fight. And
right.
Apparently Mark Richt had this policy, or it was either Mark Richt, or I assume it was Mark Richt. It just says Georgia policy of if there's a fight, the players that are involved have to get removed.
Right.
And he would not remove those players. And Jeremy Pruitt kind of, you know, that's basically what he had somewhat of an outburst. He apparently took the damn practice ball and just left.
Yeah.
Not that, I mean, I'm sure that was not the right reaction, but I think at the heart of it, this is kind of the Jeremy Pruitt. I think Tennessee fans are beginning to know just, you know, there's not going to be any leeway for star players. And I know Tennessee fans get tired of hearing about Butch Jones, but I think that was a big part of his problem was just letting the star players do what they want, whereas Pruitt seems to be the complete opposite.
Well, it sounds to me like there was a rule. And when the rules weren't followed, this may be part of the reason why 2015 was such a mess. This may be a reason why Pruitt was able to talk to the head coach like that, because if he doesn't stick to his guns, then, you know, you're just going to have chaos down there. And that sounds kind of like what they had.
Yeah. And, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of this stuff was already out there. I guess, it's obviously July. It's kind of slow time. Not a lot happened at SEC Media Days, but this kind of flared up. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, whatever the reason this was brought up by Georgia people, I think, you know, in part to, I don't want to say make Jeremy Pruitt look bad, but just kind of call into question his previous behavior.
Right.
I think it backfired completely on Georgia, because it seems like even a lot of Georgia people have taken Jeremy Pruitt's side. He's galvanized the Tennessee fan base. Everyone's fired up. And I think the most startling, I don't know if startling is the right word, but most interesting aspect of this whole thing is Georgia coming off an SEC championship, nearly won a national championship, and they seem to be obsessed with a Tennessee team that didn't win a conference game. And I think that's got to be great for Tennessee fans.
For sure. I mean, and hell, he got him an indoor practice field while he was down there. And, you know, he got things done. And look, since he's been at Tennessee, look at all the stuff he's already done here. The weight room got changed out, the practice field. So, you know, he demands excellence. And if it pisses a few people off along the way, then so what? As long as we're winning ball games and getting recruits coming in.
Right. And, you know, one other small note on that Georgia article, they say that Jeremy Pruitt even hired the strength coach to come in there for Georgia, and basically says he did not do that good of a job, the guy that Pruitt hired. So I think it's another positive to Tennessee fans that, from what I understand, Jeremy Pruitt did not really have a relationship with Tennessee's current strength coach, Craig Fitzgerald, just kind of reached out and kind of tried to figure out who was the best guy that was willing to take the job.
And right.
Everything I've heard from Fitzgerald at Penn State, and he was actually the strength coach down there at South Carolina under Spurrier when they were winning 11 games a year. And from what we saw in the spring with so few injuries, no one was lost for the year. I think that's got to be another home run hire for Tennessee.
Oh, for sure. I mean, honestly, in this offseason, you've heard, of course, most about Pruitt, but then I've never heard so much strength and conditioning coach talk in my life. So, you know, either something's going really good or something's going really bad, and everything I'm seeing is leaning toward good. So I'm excited. You know, that's one thing about Tennessee. We've struggled for years to stay healthy, and if, you know, these boys are in good shape and, you know, get us through most of the season, then, you know, who knows? The East could be exciting.
All right, the second topic I wanted to discuss with you, Shane, online sportsbook BetDSI. They released a couple prop bets. This is only the second year that I've seen them do it, and these are prop bets for SEC quarterback competitions this fall. And to Tennessee, they actually give Keller Christ a big advantage. They've got Keller Christ at minus 185. And they've got Jarrett Garantano at plus 165. So that's essentially saying, you know, they heavily lean toward Keller Chris starting for the Vols next year. What are your thoughts on that?
It sounds to me, honestly, like they've watched some highlights, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he did really well up there at Stanford. And, you know, I saw a lot of video on him. He looked really good, really strong. You know, he kind of fell apart there at the end of the year. But then on the flip side, Garantano was young, you know, and there were some sparks where he looked great, but there was a lot of times he didn't. So I don't know if that's more of a just, hey, this guy transferred in for a reason. Pruitt wanted him here for a reason. Maybe they're leaning more toward that. But honestly, I really think this one is up in the air.
Yeah, and that's why I kind of like this odds. If I was a Tennessee fan, I think I would be betting that Garantano pretty heavy. We saw the quotes come out of SEC Media Days from Gene Chizik about Garantano has won the locker room, and I think that's a big part of starting in the SEC, just having the confidence of your teammates. And I don't think Keller Christ will ever surpass Garantano in that regard. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not to say Keller Christ won't start, but I'd say it's more about 60-40 in favor of Garantano, and these odds are kind of flipped to where they're about 70% to Keller Chris. So there's some real value there with Garantano, because I think heading into fall camp, he has a slight lead. Now, obviously, when you bring in a graduate transfer quarterback, he's expected to play. The coaching staff probably expects Chris to win the job, but I still think he's got to do it this fall. And these odds are just for week one starters. So do you agree with me that there's probably some value there with betting on Garantano?
Yeah, for sure. Because I like to look at the history of, you know, how many times in the SEC has a transfer come in expecting to play. And it just, I mean, you saw it in Florida last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think Alabama one year, right. You know, these guys come in with the hype that they're going to be world beaters, and then next thing you know, the backup's playing, or what you thought was the backup. The thing I like about Garantano is he is young, you know, so as a Tennessee fan, you're kind of hoping that he picks it up quicker, and you kind of, I mean, in my mind, I hope that he does win the job based on his talent, not from his locker room, you know, speech, but I'm hoping that this is a quarterback that takes the reins and has a future with University of Tennessee. Because last thing you want to do is have this argument next year about who's going to start and be the starting quarterback, you know?
Right, and if you bench Garantano for most of the year, I think he's going to just leave anyway. And then Tennessee would be in a real bad spot there heading into 2019, as you said.
I'm curious how he would handle it, because we all remember that Georgia Tech game, and there was some definitely heavy pouting on the sideline.
Yeah, you're right. You're right on there. Now, another one of these prop bets for starting quarterback in the SEC is LSU, and I thought that was the most interesting because Joe Burrow, the Ohio State graduate transfer, he was listed as the favorite, but not by much, and less than 24 hours after those released, the website BetDSI, they've taken that one off the board, which means there was just heavy, heavy money coming in on Joe Burrow. And they wrote me an email saying that they took it off the board because they believe either the decision has been made and, you know, people in Baton Rouge already realized that he's the starter, so they were betting him hard, or they just didn't have enough information on Joe Burrow and took it off the board either way. So and what that tells me is, you know, while the decision's not publicly been made, LSU is going to roll out with Joe Burrow.
Well, we talked about this the other day. You were pretty high on him even before these odds came out.
Yeah, and I mean, it's similar to the Keller Christ deal, except this guy's not really played a whole lot. However, he has looked really good in, you know, kind of spot duty. He's looked good in Ohio State spring games. And from everything I hear from the Ohio State side, they have a ton of faith in the quarterback they're going to roll out this year. And this Joe Burrow nearly beat him out. So it's not a situation where, you know, a guy kind of lost his confidence or lost his starting spot. It was just, it just sounds like Ohio State had really two really good quarterbacks. And now, because obviously only one can start, LSU is going to gain from that. And, you know, that could be really big for the Tigers this year.
Do you think this will lead to any transfers?
Maybe, but I don't think LSU really will care, because the three guys they've got, the other guys that were listed, Miles Brennan, he's going to be a sophomore this year.
Mm-hmm.
Lowell Narcisse, he's a redshirt freshman. And Justin McMillan, who I believe is a redshirt junior. None of them have really impressed, and they all looked – I mean, McMillan looked the best in the spring game, but he's the least talented. So
right.
I don't think they have a quarterback, and I think a lot of that is why people are so down on LSU. And that's not to say that Joe Burrow is going to be like a world beater, but I think just him on the team, and like I said, he's only been there a couple weeks, didn't even go through spring, and they're already naming him the starter. I think that tells you everything you need to know about the rest of those quarterbacks.
Well, that's good, because Coach O doesn't need four quarterbacks. He needs one.
So obviously the biggest battle here on BetDSI's quarterback prop bets is the Alabama race. And Tua is minus 230, which means he's a huge favorite. And Jalen Hurts is plus 165. So these odds are very similar to Keller Christ and Jalen Hurts, to give Tennessee fans some perspective. It was very interesting to me that Christ basically had the same odds. But I think almost everybody's in you know, unison here that Tua is going to win the starting job. Do you agree?
Man, I'm telling you, don't be surprised if Saban rolls out Jalen, because it just – now, let me ask you, if this bet, when you are called a starter,
mm-hmm.
is there like a certain amount of playing time they need? Because I really think that this may be a two-quarterback thing starting out the season. And I'm just curious what, you know, constitutes a starting quarterback. Is it the first play of the game? What quarterback's in there?
Yeah, that's what it is. And just for the opening game, so.
No, Jalen. And then I would take Jalen all day long.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because you don't know the game scenario. And I could imagine Alabama, you know, a turnover or you know, a big play on a kickoff or something, and they're already first and goal to start. And I think if it is, even if Tua is the starter, if they're first and goal, I think they might just run out Hurts to do some like wild cat type stuff near the goal line. So,
well, if let me ask you this, we're just talking here. Any of these bets, if you took a bet and the first play was a wild cat with a running back there, then everybody loses? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, I think so. But, I mean, I don't know that anyone's ever done Wildcat to start the game. But, yeah, I think so.
That's awesome. I wouldn't touch any of these bets then.
So this Texas A&M quarterback prop bet I thought was pretty interesting as well. Nick Starkel, he's at minus 300 on this prop bet, while Kellen Mond is at plus 210. And I think that makes a lot of sense, because obviously when you think of Jimbo Fisher and his offense, more often than not, he's going with a guy that can throw the ball. And that's Starkel's forte, while Mond is much more of an athlete. He's an elite runner. But I think, you know, I would be very surprised if Mond wins this job. Not to say that he can't, but I think, you know, kind of like that Jalen Hurts situation, I think Mond will get on the field more often than not in special packages for A&M this year. Do you have any thoughts on that one?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head on that one.
Yeah, especially when, you know, we've talked a little bit about A&M's early schedule. They're playing Clemson, and then in week two, they're playing Alabama week four. I think you got to go with the more experienced guy that can kind of stretch the field with his arm. Whereas, you know, if they played Mond, he might just be running for his life. So I think that's a really safe bet there. Another really interesting prop bet here is Florida quarterback competition. Felipe Franks, he's currently the favorite, but not by much. He's at plus 105. Emory Jones, the true freshman, is at plus 130. And Kyle Trask is at plus 820. So they're basically saying he's the odd man out, but I think this is a bit of a sucker bet here. I think they're trying to rope people in on Emory Jones. Do you have any thoughts on the Florida quarterback competition?
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at Dan, and Emory's the only true dual threat quarterback they have. And what was he like? I think he was the fourth best dual quarterback in this recruiting class. Dan kind of handpicked him over some, I think it was Ohio State. And mm-hmm. I don't know, just the writing was on the wall. If you're seeing where he's coming from, Mississippi State, Emory does fit his mold perfect. So I think that's why a lot of people are getting sucked into that, and I'm one of them.
I agree, and all that makes sense, but Dan Mullen is just not known for throwing out quarterbacks really early. And from what I understand of everyone that's seen Emory Jones down in Gainesville, they just say he's got a long way to go in terms of passing the ball. Whereas, you know, I know Felipe Franks did, you know, a lot of people take issue with him, but I think he's got a ton of talent. There's something like kind of wrong with his head, I think, or maybe just I've heard he's had a lot of issues reading defenses and whatnot, but he's a sneaky good athlete. He's not a great thrower, but he does have a huge arm. I think it makes way more sense to throw him out there with, you know, I think he's got 7 or 8 starts under his belt. Let him kind of work his way through the offense. And maybe, you know, if the season goes downhill, then maybe you put in Emory Jones. But it just seems like a big gamble. I think they're basically throwing away the season if they start with Emory Jones week one as a starter.
Well, you know, Dan's in a new environment. There's a lot of expectations on him. The last thing he wants is a quarterback back there that he doesn't know how they're going to handle it under the pressure. You know, mm-hmm. at least Felipe's been there. You know, he didn't have a great track record last year, but he does have experience. He has played in Gainesville. He has played in some big games. So maybe it's one of those that he kind of works Emory in over the season. But yeah, maybe you just stick with Felipe, because I mean, that's what I would do. I would lean more toward a seasoned player than I would just a true freshman.
Mm-hmm. All right, the last quarterback prop bet put out by BetDSI is Arkansas. Now Cole Kelly is the current favorite based on these odds at -180, Ty Story at +135. I was pretty surprised to see the disparity there, because coming out of spring, it looked like Ty Story was gonna be the starter, not necessarily based on the spring game, but just out of reports out of Fayetteville. I don't have a very good read on this one. I think Cole Kelly does have a higher upside. What are your thoughts on the battle there in Arkansas?
Well, you know, when I think of Morris, I think of an athletic quarterback. You know, somebody that can make plays with their legs and their arms. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know a lot about the quarterbacks down there. Is there anyone that would fit that mold? Maybe something similar to a Baker Mayfield, or, you know, somebody that can just scramble and make something out of nothing.
Yeah, you know how you might be thinking of a poor man's Baker Mayfield?
Yeah.
They have a homeless, debt, bankrupt version of Baker Mayfield in Ty Story. So I mean, he might be worth 2 or 3 wins.
Well, didn't he have like 7 games under his belt last year, or 7 or 9 or something like that?
Cole Kelly did, but Ty Story, No, he played, I think he was injured, and, you know, it was just kind of a shit show down there in Fayetteville. So I think, honestly, it's going to come down to the quarterback that understands his Chad Morris's system better. Mm-hmm. And there's just really no way for us to tell who that'll be. Now, they do have a commit from a quarterback that's pretty touted that does fit the mold of what you're talking about. So I think these guys are basically just biding time until that guy gets on campus, you know?
Is this the one that was committed to Memphis, or and then he went to IMG or something like that?
No, that's receiver Shamir Nash. And now he's
way off.
He looks like a good prospect. This guy's name is Kenneth Jefferson, and he actually looks a little bit Deshaun Watson-esque. I mean, he's killing it down in Mississippi, from what I understand. So, I mean, they may have found someone to build around there.
Well, that'd be good. Yeah, if they can. I mean, that's really what they need. It all starts, like, if you got a new regime coming in, you know, get you a quarterback. You know, get somebody exciting, get somebody that can win some games that you didn't expect, and then you can build around that. So, maybe they found him.
Yeah, and you know, and you make a good point, because I've been really down on Arkansas basically this whole offseason. I've got them at number 14 in my power rankings. I picked them 7th in the West. And that has a lot to do with the talent on their roster and just the change to a new coaching staff. And, you know, I love Chief just as much as the next guy, but I think he's a really bad fit for teaming up with Chad Morris. But, you know, if you can disregard all those negatives, the schedule lines up really well for them. They get Vanderbilt out of the East. They also get Missouri. So, you know, that's not a murder's row by any means.
Right.
They don't play a single Power 5 non-conference opponent. They're the only SEC team, and that's obviously because Michigan bitched out on the series against Arkansas. So, you know, if they can get four non-conference wins and beat Vanderbilt, I mean, they're looking at – you just got to win one more to make a bowl game. So, let's say they make a bowl game, and I mean, I think they could have a ton of momentum heading into 2019.
Yeah, I mean, they're already locking down recruits, so – it's a hard state to recruit to, but if you're on TV every day and you're in a bowl game, you know, it makes it a lot easier.
All right, so Shane, this was pretty big news dropped yesterday in the SEC. Alabama, they're getting a Hard knock style fall camp that's going to be broadcast on ESPN. What are your thoughts on that?
Surprising. I mean, shocker. I can't believe that the Nick Saban regime would let cameras behind. You know, he's one of those guys that comes across as he doesn't want anybody to know how the sausage is made, you know, but it's kind of crazy. The thing I look at is maybe because so many of his assistant coaches have left, you know, might as well let the cameras in and show them how it's done.
Yeah. And for anybody that missed this, so what this is going to be is just there's a camera crew. They're already down there, from what I understand, already filming. And they're just going to film training camp. It's going to be all access. I don't think it's going to be as good as Hard Knocks, obviously, because, you know, there's no profanities. There's no no one's going to get cut, really, and camera's going to be rolling. Like, that's kind of the best part of Hard Knocks every year. But the debut episode is going to come out Thursday, August 9th, and it's going to be on ESPN2. And then every week it's going to come out leading up to the season. So I think this is going to be a really big hit. It's obviously going to open up the doors a little bit to what's going on in Tuscaloosa. And I think it's just going to be another huge recruiting tool for Alabama and Nick Saban.
Yeah, I wonder whose idea that was. I can't imagine Nick came up with that one.
Well, did you ever watch the Being Brett Bielema series that came out about 2 years ago?
No.
It was really well done, and it was done in part basically led by an Arkansas radio guy named Bo Mattingly, and obviously they didn't do it with Brett Bielema last offseason. They did it with the new Minnesota coach, P.J. Fleck, and it wasn't as good, and I think it's just because it was missing Bielema, but that same guy is doing this show with Alabama, so...
Is it going to be kind of like... didn't they do one a while back with Notre Dame?
That was Showtime. And okay. And that was like during the season.
Yeah.
And actually Michigan did that last year, I think, and it was on Amazon. And that was well done. So that was the thing. I've heard Nick Saban talk about this. He's not going to allow them to do it during the season just because he thinks it's a distraction. But
right.
I think he's cool with it being preseason because obviously, you know, Alabama – I don't think anyone goes down to Alabama and challenges Nick Saban. You know, I mean, if anyone challenges them, they don't play or they leave. So,
now is there any pay for this? I mean, is there obviously we can't, you know, pay the players, but somebody's making some money off this.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I don't know. Obviously, like you said, they can't pay the players, but that is actually something that Jim Harbaugh talked about this offseason, about Amazon, you know, filming his team and using his team footage and getting interview with the players. He wants to try to figure out a way to pay the players for what they contribute to the video after they graduate. But obviously there's nothing been done on that, but he just kind of expressed his interest in it. And I think that's a good idea because, I mean, I'm sure the players like doing it. I don't think anyone's, like, forced to do an interview by any means. But at the same time, you're, like, you're a celebrity when you do it. So,
yeah,
you need to be compensated somehow, you know?
Speaking of Harbaugh, did you see that that question he got asked the other day. Dude, if you can include that clip on here, that was great. That reporter, kudos to you, brother.
Yeah, here it is. I'll play it for you right now.
Okay.
Coach Crowley, Sullivan, Spartans Wire. A little bit of a follow-up on that question. I came into Ann Arbor with perhaps the most hype of any coach in the history of the Big Ten, maybe in all of college football. A few years later, you've got a third place, and fourth place finish, and you're 1-5 against Michigan State and Ohio State. What do you have to do this year to demonstrate to the Michigan community that you are on the path to achieving what they hired you to achieve?
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty ballsy by that guy. And it was clearly, he said he was from a Michigan State outlet. So,
yeah.
I mean, he was kind of, he was kind of putting it to old Hardball there, wasn't he?
I loved it, man. You can hear crickets in there. And I guarantee that may be the last time he's invited to any media outing.
I think Hardball's an interesting case because obviously, you know, he came in with so much hype and he's not really delivered a ton of it. But at the same time, it's like, you know, he's playing against Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan State. Yeah, he probably should have won a couple more of those games, but, you know, he basically played Ohio State. He's played them three times, lost three times, but twice, I mean, it was like a coin flip he could have won. And then, of course, the big Michigan State game he lost was on that crazy punt block return.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't think you could put that one on Hardball, so.
No.
I understand he needs to win more, but I think it's a little overrated at this point, people piling on him. And I would not be surprised if Michigan has a really big year this year.
Well, and it's how much they're paying him, you know. I think that's the big one. I mean, the guy's making a shit ton of money, and they want some wins, and. I think, you know, but again, if Tennessee were in that situation, we'd be happy, you know.
Right.
It's kind of like, you know, kind of like that Fulmer era, you know, or that Mark Richt we talked about. You get that 10-game winning season so many times, you forget what a 6-game winning season looks like or a 5-game winning season. So, yeah, give me 10 games every day.
Man, there'll be the days Tennessee's firing coaches after winning 10 games.
Oh, geez, that will be.
All right, I think that's going to do it for this one, Shane. Thanks for joining, as always. And everybody out there listening, we appreciate you. Give us a like and a subscribe on iTunes. Give us a rating. 5-star hearts we prefer, so that'll do it.
Yeah,
for us.
I mean, hell, if you listen to the podcast this long, at least give us 5 stars. It'd help us out a long ways. I appreciate it. Go Vols.